97.9 The Hill, WCHL, and UNC School of Media and Journalism present Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. Sports Focus, dedicated to in-depth examination of issues of overriding importance in the sports world. Each week, we'll discuss problems and look for solutions in professional, collegiate, and amateur sports. From Carroll Hall on the Carolina campus, here's your host, UNC Journalism Professor Charlie Tuggle.
Welcome to Sports Focus. Our topic today, the upcoming Winter Olympics. Our guest, Rachel Axon, sports writer for USA Today. She'll be leaving very soon for South Korea. Rachel, your very first Olympic Games were in Sochi. And now we're headed into the Olympic Games for 2018. As a result of what happened in Sochi, Russia is banned as a federation from these games. Specific Russian athletes are banned. Others will compete, but under a neutral flag as, quote, athletes from Russia. Take us back to Sochi and build us back up to how we got here.
Sure. So during the Sochi Olympics and before, Russia was operating a system of doping in the country in which positive tests were covered up. And then specifically during the Sochi Olympics for specific athletes, the urine in their sample that gets collected after their competitions are over was swapped out. Dr. Grigory Rodchenkov, who was the former, he was the director of the Moscow lab at the time and ran the Sochi lab during the Olympics, was kind of the organizer of this this doping system, you know, at the behest of the sports ministry in Russia. The FSB, you know, which is the, you know, the follower to the KGB, the one who helped open these bottles. And so there were athletes who basically effectively could dope during games because they had banked clean urine prior to that and had it swapped out. Through the course of investigations by the World Anti-Doping Agency that they commissioned, you know, Rodchenkov came forward as a whistleblower, brought evidence, and revealed the system that, you know, Sochi is kind of the thing people know, but it did run for years. Positive tests were covered up for years. So, you know, WADA did a couple investigations into this. The IOC created two separate commissions to look into this. One chaired by Denny Oswald looked at the individual cases, and that's where you're talking about. There's been more than, I think we're up to 43 Russian athletes who had their results disqualified from Sochi. I think it's a total of 13 medals among those 43 athletes. As we're talking this week, almost all of them are appealing those decisions to CAS because in addition to disqualifying the results, they were banned by the IOC from the Olympics for life. That itself seems questionable and like it might not hold, but those cases are ongoing. And then besides that, a separate commission chaired by Samuel Schmid, you know, looked at the system of doping and came to essentially the same conclusions that the prior investigations had done, that they ran this system, that there were officials involved. And as a result, in December, the IOC made a decision where the Russian Olympic Committee is suspended. Certain individuals, you know, the former sports minister is banned for life from going and some others. And athletes from Russia have this path to compete in Korea as Olympic athletes from Russia. So they won't compete under the Russian flag. They won't wear Russian uniforms. That obviously is the name and, you know, has been criticized, you know, for not being strong enough. As part of that process, they need to basically vet any potential athletes to make sure they're not implicated in this system or have, you know, previous doping violations. And so they created a panel of anti-doping people to do that. The IOC announced last week, that they had basically cleared 389 of the Russians that were put forward who could go on the team. Now, Russia's not going to have a team of 389, but it looks highly likely that this Olympic athletes from Russia team, while not a Russian team, could be as big as one that the Federation probably would have fielded otherwise, just with maybe a different makeup without some of those other athletes who had been implicated able to compete in Korea.
All right, so Victor Ahn is one of the folks currently banned. Some other high-profile Russian athletes who stood a very good chance of meddling. Some of those are saying, wait, I wasn't part of that. You know, why am I being, you know, picked out? What is the process for becoming an Olympian from Russia?
So the IOC in the course of, you know, implementing this decision has created a couple groups that it's designated to make these decisions. So the review panel, I don't remember the official name of what they're calling it, but they set up a review panel with, you know, their medical director, a representative from WADA, which was Gunter Junger, the lead WADA investigator, someone from Doping Free Sport, and it was chaired by Valerie Forniron, who's the head of this independent testing authority that's trying to get off the ground. And they looked at all of the names that, you know, Russia gave them of here's potential Olympians, you know, people who had met the qualification criteria. And the IOC just released, like, today, they didn't say, okay, Victor Ahn was excluded because X, right? Like, they're not addressing individual cases. But as names are starting to come out of some high-profile athletes who maybe weren't sanctioned for Sochi but are not going to be eligible for Korea, there's been a lot of attention to this in the Russian media, the Russian, you know, Olympic Committee asking why were they excluded. And so the IOC today released, you know, here's what we looked at. And that includes, you know, certainly all the information found, you know, in the McLaren investigation that WADA did. You know, WADA has, you know, kind of late in the game here, received an electronic database from the Moscow lab that shows basically other athletes who, you know, had a test. It was reported as positive, but you can see in the data that, you know, are reported as negative didn't have any drugs, but, you know, was reported as fine. And so there's a host of information that they've looked at. So they're not saying specifically, here's why this athlete or that athlete is ineligible. They haven't even, you know, the IOC has not confirmed, like, who has been excluded. This has come out, you know, on the Russian side. So they've just released it, and, you know, it's unclear where on that list of criteria someone may have been tripped up or declared ineligible by that panel. Now that that decision is made, a separate panel is going to work with the suspended Russian Olympic Committee to see who fills those spots, and then the IOC has the final say to say we invite you or not. I've talked to people at the IOC, and it seems pretty unlikely that, you know, any individual athlete would clear all those hurdles and then not be invited. So, you know, the big one was the doping one, but certainly there are some who could still be further excluded, although that would be a bit unexpected.
Sports Focus. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Sports Focus. We're talking with Rachel Axon of USA Today about the upcoming Olympics. Rachel, despite all of this and Russian protestations from various, sports bodies there, Russia is not talking boycott. Does that say to you that, all right, you caught us, we know, we're just going to deal with this just like we did in Rio? And then move on. Does it say that to you, or does it say something else that Russia is not not saying boycott?
I think that the people that I talk to in anti-doping and in sport, I don't think it's the latter. You know, Russia still denies the existence of a state-run scheme, although there's, you know, a lot of evidence to back up Dr. Rodchenkov. Instead, the government has tried to basically pin it on him. They've issued charges against him. So I don't think that they're accepting of the findings here. I think mostly how people are seeing it is, you know, this is a big political concession to Russia because, there's no flags. They're not going to wear their uniforms, that kind of stuff. But it's still going to say Olympic athletes from Russia. So, you know, the day after the decision was issued, you had someone like Elena Isinbayeva, who's, you know, obviously a very good pole vaulter from their country, now retired, but, still working in sport. And she has been very critical of WADA and saying all this is false throughout the process. And then, you know, this decision comes out and she says, you know, basically, like, it's still Russia. We're okay. It's still Russia. So they are not going to boycott that we know of right now, although there's been a little bit of talk of that in the Russian media, given some of the athletes who were now seen as being excluded. But, I think in the harsh light of day, there have been many who have said the IOC didn't go far enough and that some of the things that they did were, you know, political to sort of, you know, accommodate the Russian interests.
Well, you know, politics entering into the Olympics, who would ever imagine such a thing? Because
right.
we did have boycotts in 80 and in 84.
Yep.
And I'm old enough
yep.
to remember that. And I thought, you know, this is terrible. Can't we just, despite all of our differences, can't we just compete against one another on a level playing field for 2 weeks and then we'll go back to all the political fights? But sadly, that has not been the case historically.
Nope.
So what do you think will be the outcome of this particular Olympics in terms of can we compete on a level playing field? Let me look at it two different ways. As an athlete from another country, I want to compete against the very best. If I win a gold, I want to know that that was against the very best.
Sure.
But I want it to be against the very best, not doped up.
Sure.
So, you know, you can look at it two ways.
Yeah, I think anybody who could look at any Olympics and say it was clean is foolish, right? The Olympics and other major events, you know, people in anti-doping refer to them as an IQ test. You know you're going to be tested. You know you're being watched. If you are going to cheat in that fashion, you have to be pretty stupid to do it in a way that you're going to get caught. That being said, I don't think Russia or no Russia, you know, no Olympics you could ever say is totally clean. And you can look at the history of the Olympics and an anti-doping, you know, it's certainly not been just Russia, right? This happens in every country. I think what the hope is, you know, there will be athletes left out. Presumably, you know, athletes who have been implicated in this will theoretically, at least at this point, not be allowed to compete, still waiting on the CAS review, which, you know, will determine whether it upholds the IOC decisions and could lead to some very interesting developments right before the games. So to your point, does it help? Will it probably be cleaner? Yes. And the IOC and anti-doping are starting to make efforts as they, you know, they started before Rio and they're doing it this time where they're doing some pre-games targeted testing. So, you know, looking at the most high-risk sports and the most high-risk athletes and, you know, if there are athletes who aren't being tested, making plans for those to be done in the lead up to the game. So I think the hope is that it will be better and that the athletes who are there will be, you know, not doping. But I don't think that any athlete is fooling himself or herself to think that there will be none of that.
Sports Focus, we'll be right back.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sports Focus and our discussion with Rachel Axon of USA Today about the upcoming games, Olympic Games in Pyeongchang, South Korea. Rachel, we've been talking a lot about the Russia and doping and all that kind of stuff. Let's imagine that you and I are having a conversation 10 years ago. And I say, Rachel, in 2018, you know what? I'm predicting that the Russians won't be there and the North Koreans will. What would you have thought at that time?
Yeah, it would have been bewildering, of course. You know, the system that Russia was running, you know, I don't think anyone, even as it was coming out, could have imagined the extent of it. I say that, and that's still a little baffling, considering there is precedent with East Germany running a very systemic program of doping in its country. The North Korea thing, I think, is the, I don't want to say more surprising, but, you know, given the history of the country, obviously, you know, the war on the peninsula that has still technically ongoing because there's not been a treaty signed. Yeah, I think of course that would be surprising to anyone sitting there back in 2008 looking at this.
So ice hockey player, female ice hockey players from North Korea have now arrived in South Korea. They are starting to practice with their South Korean counterparts on a joint team. It's like every day it blows my mind, you know, that, wow, can, you know, you look at all the problems created by cheating in sports, and now is it possible that sports will be the mechanism through which two groups of people who hate each other will, they're even calling for reunification of the peninsula. It's like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, I think as a person, I probably fall down on the way more skeptical side. And if you look at this, you know, just looking at the political experts and the reporting that our news site has done, you know, they are skeptical that this will mean, you know, be anything sort of more than a symbolic thing. And you know, we might get to March or get to the end of the Paralympics and, you know, be back to missile testing and, you know, the rhetoric that we've seen. It's certainly, you know, positive, and the IOC very much wanted this. And, you know, one of the core Olympic ideals is inclusion. And so this is something they've been working toward. It does come with issues besides just, you know, cultural feelings, especially in women's hockey. You know, they, the South Korean team gets in because they are the host country, and it's one that's really working to develop the sport in the country. But, you know, there's been questions raised about the fairness of this, right? You know, Switzerland, their first opponent, sort of protested this move because, you know, they have a roster of 23 and you're going to give them, you know, 12 more, and that's not fair. And so the IOC's decision capped the number of players who can play in a game, but then required the South Korean coach to put at least three North Korean players on the team. So now you have, you know, three South Korean players who have, you know, been training for this, you know, earn their spots on the team, who are going to be bumped or be healthy scratches. And I think the, you know, conclusion you come to there is that the IOC valued, you know, inclusion and diplomacy more than quality. And that's something that Haley Wickenheiser, who's an IOC member and a former hockey player herself, pointed out is, you know, you're not doing this on the men's team, right? You're only doing this to the women's team. So it's certainly positive, and everyone wanted North Korea to be there. It probably makes games a little bit safer, but I don't think it's, you know, all sunshine and roses going forward on that one.
All right. In the 2 minutes that we have left, let's talk a little bit about some of the U.S. athletes you think we ought to be watching. Is Shaun White one of them? Do you think his return is golden?
I think he has shown the potential that he can be at that level. You know, to qualify on the team a few weeks ago, he won this just crazy progressive half pipe contest in snowmass, scored 100 to get his spot on the team. So he's certainly still capable of riding at that level. I think what's pretty clear, you know, in the past 4 or 5 years is that the gap has very much narrowed, and in some case might not exist, between him and the rest of the field. There's a bunch of riders who could challenge him. I talked to one yesterday, Scotty James from Australia, who's doing the most technically difficult trick in the half pipe. There's a Japanese rider, Ayumu Hirano, who won the silver in Sochi, and I would expect him to get a medal. So I think there's certainly the possibility. I would never count Shaun White out in a half pipe contest, but I don't think it's, you know, kind of a foregone conclusion like maybe it was his first two games.
All right, we have a minute left. What about the Jamaican bobsled team? What are we?
The Jamaican bobsled team is piloted by Jasmine Senlater, who is an American. She grew up in New Jersey, but has Jamaican heritage. I think maybe her dad is Jamaican. And so she trained with the U.S. program and went to Sochi as the USA3, but felt like it was really important to develop that in her home country. And so not only will we have that, but we will also have a bobsled team from Nigeria. Similar thing, their pilot was American and was in the system and has familial roots. Maybe one of her parents is from Nigeria. And so, yeah, there will definitely be a few countries that aren't typically represented at the Winter Games there.
And that's one of the fun things about the Winter Olympics is some of these equatorial countries, if you will, participating in winter sports. That does it for this edition of Sports Focus. Thanks to our guest, Rachel Axon. Thanks also to engineer Gary Kirk. And as always, thanks to you for listening. Cheers.
Thanks to Richard Southall, Mark Nagel, and Deborah Southall at the College Sport Research Institute at the University of South Carolina for their research and guidance and for access to CSRI's international network of sources. Sports Focus is a service of UNC School of Media and Journalism.